It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of The 19th Hole. I am your host, Michael Williams, bringing you, once again, the best of the best of the very best in golf and golf lifestyle. We have a great show for you this week. Joining us for this edition will be one of my favorite people from one of my favorite places, Gilles Gagnon. I say it very French, the director of golf emeritus at one of my very favorite places, Casa de Campo. He's going to be talking about all the great changes and additions and improvements that they've made there to what is, what has been and is positioned to be going forward as the one of the very best resort golf destinations in the world. It has both of them. It has the resort amenities. It has just some of the most perfect golf you'll ever want to find. And Gilles is just a man you want to talk to about that. So I'm really excited about talking to him. Also joining me is the CEO of the Golf Performance Academy, Leigh-Ann Gilchrist. And Leigh-Ann has done some amazing things with golf and junior golf, and she is preparing a program that is destined to take some young golfers and make them major champions. That's what her mission and vision is. And I find it to be a fascinating story. I can't wait to talk to her about what she's doing, the facilities that she is preparing, how she plans to take these raw talents and turn them into champions. She's got a plan. She's going to share it with you on this show. It's going to be a great show. I'm really excited about it. So why not just get right to it? So in the meantime, go get yourself a cold beverage and a crunchy snack, and we'll be right here waiting for you. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Hi, Michael. This is Barbara Nicholas. You've got a great voice. We love hearing what you have to say, and we wish you the best for many years.
Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host and Sherpa. I say this all the time, that one of the best things about having this gig, it's getting a chance to see some of the best golf courses, some of the best golf resorts in the world. And I will say right here from the beginning that those are two totally different things, because being a great golf course is one thing. Having a great golf course, difficult enough to do. Having a great resort is almost a totally different thing. It is so complex and so difficult that a lot of people try to do it, but really only a fraction of that group succeeds. And to have the best golf with the best resort, that is indeed a small group, my friend. And my next guest is someone who's very familiar with that, because he has been placed at one of the best golf courses and one of the best golf resorts in the world for years. Please welcome the director of golf emeritus at Casa de Campo, Gilles Gagnon. Gilles, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
It's always a pleasure talking with you too, buddy. And are you in the D.C. area right now? Because I know that when you're not in the Dominican Republic, you're somewhere close to me, right?
I'm in Florida, actually.
Oh, you're in Florida.
We have a home here. Yeah. We're in Palm Beach Garden. We have a home here. We've had a home for, I don't know, for 10 or 15 years that we come in once in a while. My wife likes to get out of Disneyland once in a while. You know, we live at Casa de Campo is Disneyland, Disney World, all put together. So we come back to reality a little bit and do a little shopping and stuff like that. So that's why we're here.
Well, beautiful, man. Welcome back. I'm glad you're here for a bit. But I know for many of us, Casa de Campo is a dream destination. I would say a bucket list destination for years. And it's amazing the longevity of Casa de Campo. That location is It's 50 years old, is it not?
Yeah, we're a little more than 50 years old. Yeah, and I've been there 45 years, and
my goodness.
I can assure you that it's changed drastically over the years.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the things have changed. We know in accommodations, in terms of the attractions that you have, but one thing that you have now that you always had is great golf, and that's where I want to go with the conversation now, because I know that we'll talk a little about the three different golf courses, because and we'll start with Teeth of the Dog, which underwent some renovation/restoration. You can tell me which one of those it was, but I know that Teeth of the Dog is open again to much acclaim in the industry. Talk to me a little bit about Teeth of the Dog in terms of what was done there and what we can expect to see when we go play it now.
Well, you know, Teeth of the Dog has always been our number one golf course.
Yeah.
And, you know, Pete Dye loved it, and Pete Dye always messed with it a little bit. You know, he always liked to do a little change here, a little change there. We've been hit by a couple of hurricanes. And so there's been a lot of changes over the last 45 years. But let's say the last 15 or 20, Pete basically had made some changes that he was trying to help out. You know, he got older and he wanted to put a little hill somewhere where you could bump it on instead of to have to fly it on, and things like on number 8, for example. But it got to be, you know, it was old and beat up. You know, the bunkers had settled, the greens got smaller. The fairway, you know, we have very, it was built on coral, so there was not a whole lot of top, you know, topsoil. So a lot of places was hard and difficult to grow grass. So, you know, the ownership decided that, you know, it was time to kind of perk this thing up. So they hired Jerry Pate. Jerry Pate was a good friend with the owners. And basically what we talked about and what they say was, look, we do not want to do a Jerry Pate. We don't want to do any other architect. We want the golf course to stay as the Pete Dye golf course. So let's make changes, but not, you know, it's basically a facelift, you know. So we scraped about 2-3 inches off all the fairways, and, you know, we put 3-5 inches of new sand. And then we planted the paspalum grass, which is, you know, the grass that you could, after it grows, you can pretty much water with, you know, salt water or brackish water, and it's it does extremely well. So then they, you know, we took all the bunkers that the front, you know, the facing the tees, for example, had kind of raised up, because the sand pros, these machines come out from the low side, and then the backside towards the green had settled. So, you know, it wasn't framing the golf course properly. So they went out there and redid all the bunkers, redid all the tees, replaced some tees that we had lost, some tees that we put at different places that weren't there originally. They look at pictures, and they went through, you know, the entire facelift. But if you go there, and I've had people come out and they go, oh my God, it looks so amazing, but I don't see much difference, or I don't see any difference. Well, that was the idea. We wanted to keep the Pete Dye golf course, the one that was always ranked in the top in the world, and that people enjoyed, but now it's in pristine shape. So it's totally, you know, the holes are framed, you know, the rough stayed the same. We didn't touch that rough much. And the paspalum is so green that it's almost like you're looking down, that, you know, you're playing down a carpet. So it's really spectacular.
Yeah, it's kind of great to see a great course last till we get to the point where it can be benefited by some of these great new innovations that we have, like paspalum and the bunkering systems and things like that. And when it gets to this point, you can actually take it and make it as good as it ever was. And I think that's what you have now at Teeth of the Dog. For those who haven't played it, talk about some of the really special holes and how you play them.
Well, you know, we have 7 holes on the ocean, and actually we could say 8, because number 4, if you hit it over the green, you're going to roll in a bunker, but the ocean is right back. So you actually see, when you get to number 3, you see the ocean all the way till they get 8. And then when you get back at top 9 and 10, you can see the ocean, and then you play 15, 16, 17 right on the ocean. But 5, you know, we probably have, I would say, and I've played in Scotland, I've played, you know, a lot of places like you have, we probably have the best collection of par threes there. You know, we have 5, 7, 13, and 16. 13 is an inland, and it's basically a little grass island that sits around, you know, there's sand all the way around. But five is a, you know, you could play from 70 yards to about 175. And it's like trying to, you know, throw a golf ball on the, on a little beach towel. It's a small green and it's, you know, it's spectacular. And then you play six, which is a long par four, and you tee up kind of elevated and you tee up down towards the fairway. Then you got seven, and I should talk more about yesterday because I just said about the par three, but seven, it goes from about, again, about 80 yards to 225. It's a big green and you got to carry right over the water all the way. Then like 13 is the one with the sand all the way around. And then 16, when you're coming in, you know, the wind usually blows from left to right or right to left. You know, that's the two prevailing, the winter and the summer. And it's a little kind of a L-shaped green. And it goes to about 195 to about, again, the forward tees are 70 or 80 yards. But, you know, you got to hit such beautiful shots and it's so gorgeous. You know, you the trade wind kind of blows. You got beautiful small waves that come in and hit the side of those of five and seven and 16. It's a little elevated, you know, above the sea level. But it's just, you got to hit some quality shots. You know, Pete Dye, all our golf course actually with the par three, Pete Dye always built, I always said, Pete built the best par threes, always had the best par three. It's par fives, I was never, you know, there's never a par five that I play, let's say on the golf course at Casa de Campo, that I could say, wow, that's an amazing par five. Mm-hmm. They're good, but they're just not the same quality of the par threes. You know, the par threes, that was his specialty. I mean, obviously 17 at TPC and in Jacksonville, you know, that's what he's pretty much famous for. So, yeah, so it's, you know, you could go from hitting, say on five, I'd hit from say 150, I hit an eight iron or seven iron, then I'll hit a five or a six on seven. I hit about another, maybe a little longer on 13. And then when I get to 16, it's the same thing, you know, for the play where I play from, five, six, seven, and you got to hit it extremely well. And you got to make sure that you're on the right line because otherwise, you know, you kick in the water or you get a little bunkers and
yeah.
So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's really the perfect combination of a test and a resort course, a joy to play. It challenges you, but it gently challenges you and always gives you the scenery that you would think of for a resort course, a destination course like this. And I'm not the only one who thinks so, because this is a course that is perennially named one, if not the top course in its region, the Caribbean. And I don't know where it ranks this year in the different rankings, but it's always in the top one or two.
Yeah, we're back. We were two and three for a while because, you know, the condition wasn't there. And we're back to, you know, to number one now. They just came out. But, you know, again, the ratings, you know, it all varies and stuff like that. We're proud to be part of them. But it's not the reason why we did this. We did it because, you know, we wanted to give the golf course, this famous golf course, this great golf course, we want to present it to our guests and our golfers the way it should be, you know, and that's what basically we did.
Well, let's go from the teeth of the dog, which is this gentle test and I think so welcoming, to what I think gives another side of Pete Dye, Pete and Alice Dye, because just a quick story, I met them when they opened which was the course, is of course right here near here in Washington DC, and I met the two of them, and Full Cry was the name of the course, and they are the nicest people. They were just the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. So kind to each other, so polite to everybody else. And then you get on their courses and it's like the course is physically attacking you, and you don't get much of that spirit at Teeth of the Dog. You get every bit of it, I feel, at To Die For. That is one of the greatest challenges of a golf course that I have faced. That's my opinion. Talk about your thoughts on To Die For, the 27 holes that are beside the river there at Casa de Campo.
Yeah, Die For, you know, it was named because we had three of them, three Die golf course already. And then basically somehow one day I said, oh, Die For, it'd be good. It's the 4-1, but you know, you yell four. So it's Die and then D-Y-E and then F-O-R-E, Die For. So That was my brilliant thought. Now, and we have three nines up there. We have one that we call Marina, because when you're playing, you on the second hole, you can see the marina and the river down below. Then we have another one that's Chavon, because when you get to number 10, if you turn around and you look and you see Altos de Chavon, an artisan village up there that's, yeah, you know, hanging over the cliff there. And it's, and then the other one, the third nine, it was very, again, another brilliant idea. We call it Lagos because there's water. We have, you know, lakes there that peat, man-made lakes, but you got them on about every hole, you know, just a couple hole without it. But so, yeah, and, you know, funny enough, the when people play between the teeth of the dog and die four, we used to be, you know, it wasn't even close, you know, like people liked it, but it wasn't, you know. And now we're at the point where when you do a little survey with the guests, we're at 55-45, you know, 55 love the teeth better and 45 love die four. So it's a big golf course. It's big fairways, big greens, big bunker. And obviously because the wind blows quite a bit on top there. So you know, the marina, you're kind of playing down, you kind of, you start up and kind of move your way down, and then you get to the back nine, number 10, then you start, and it's basically for the first three or four holes, you play 10, 11, 12, 13, you're right along the river, and the river's down below about 300 feet. So it's just a, you know, beautiful, you know, beautiful. You see the mountain in the background. So it's a big, you know, the fairway on teeth of the dog, the fairways are pretty generous, but on die four, they're very generous because, you know, because of the wind and so forth. But, you know, it's a really beautiful visually, it's intimidating, but you have space to hit it.
Yeah.
Then we did the Lagos, which, so we have water on one, two, six, seven, eight, and nine. So there's water on either side. You know, Pete did some lakes there type of thing that they were actually taking rocks from there to build the marina, to build the you know, the marina over there. It's kind of, they had a port and everything. So they were taking a lot of rocks from up there because it was very rocky. And so when we went there the first time, you walk around and said, Pete, what are we going to do around here? There's a bunch of holes out here. Wow. And he goes, yeah, this is going to be great. We're going to, you know, seal that up and make some, you know, some lakes out of there. It's not as popular because obviously when you play the Lagos, you see the golf course, you know, with the pajon, which is a kind of a blondish grass that grows on both sides, which makes it very, very attractive. But people obviously want to play the original. That's part of the deal because, you know, you're playing again along the river. You know, on both sides, you see Altos de Chavon, you see the marina, you see the ocean. And, you know, golf is golf, but, you know, if you're playing, you know, there's a difference with playing a golf course when you're playing between homes on both sides and some trees versus, you know, with the wonderful vista that we have there. It's really hard to beat, but it's a tough golf course. You know, a lot of side hill lies, downhill lies. I love to play up there, but if I play 18, after 18, I'm, you know, I'm a little tired, where teeth of the dog, I could play it, you know, twice the same day. It's flatter and it's, you know, it's a different, but the great thing about us is that you have three different experiences, right? You got the ocean one, you got one on the hill, and then you got the links, which is more inland.
Right. And the links is what I wanted to talk about next, is because that's another one that I have not had the opportunity to play. Talk about the links and what people can expect to find there.
Well, you know, the links is so underrated, you know, because you have two, you know, amazing golf courses. And Pete loved the links, and he did it in a way where the fairways are a little tighter. We have smaller greens, and it's not as long. You know, it's actually not very long. You know, played at 6,000 maybe from the forward tees, and sometimes 58, depending where we place them. But if you got a wedge in your hand and you hit that wedge 125 and that's the number, you better not go 122 or 128 because then you're going to roll off and you go in these little bunkers that he has, and you got, you know, you're chipping up, and you know, the short game is very, very needed there. But everybody wants to play there. You know, they play, well, I don't know if I want to play. And then if you play, I just think that's probably the best golf course that he's done. But you know, there's homes on either side with trees, and we do also have on the back nine, we have two lakes there that you play around on the, you play 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Uh-huh.
You're playing around with couple par threes, but it's, you know, It's a nice golf course, and I want to tell you, the lady golfers, when they play, the women play, you know, it's short, right? And they don't have to hit a drive in a 3-wood to a par 4, which Alice always made sure of that on all of our golf course, you know. Mm-hmm. If I play with my wife and I'm hitting a driver and she from the tees that I'm supposed to play from, and she does, and she drives at about 170, let's say, fairly long, but we'll end up with the same iron more or less. You know, if I need a 7, she'll need a 7. She's not going to sit there with a 3-wood and a wedge. So women will go out on the links and they play their best round ever because, you know, they can bunt it up there and they have a shorter iron, or they can, you know, putt it up these little hills. And if they get a little accurate, the ladies that are hit it straight and, you know, kind of get it around, man, they come out of there and they're like, the smile from, you know, ears to ears. I can tell you that they love it. And again, it's, you know, people say, well, I don't want to play the links. Well, I think that's it's a mistake because I'm not saying that you necessarily want to play 3 rounds, you know, 2 rounds there if you're going to play 4, but definitely you should go, you know, maybe 2 on the tee, 1 on the I-4, 1 on links. I mean, you're not going to be disappointed. It's a really, really good, demanding golf course, but in a softer way in term of, you know, you don't have to hit it 275 yards or to be able to score.
And, you know, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about really was the distance, because I love that thing that you don't have to be super long or, you know, necessarily, you know, a hero on the golf course to enjoy the golf course. Because, you know, since the pandemic, everybody knows we've had this big cohort of new golfers that's come into the game. And they travel, man. Those guys like to travel. They like to go to see different places. They like to enjoy the places where they are. And, of course, they like to play golf while they are there. And I'm sure you're seeing some of that at Casa de Campo. Links is probably a perfect place for them to get into the game. And I'm sure you're doing some other things, too, that are that make the game more welcoming to this new cohort of golfers.
Well, you know, I'm very traditionalist, which, you know, the young generation. I mean, I have 4 grandsons and things and that play. But it's totally different. You know, the kids get over there and a lot of things have been softened. You know, the golf links and yeah, Tee to the Dog were really, really hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, kids today, they don't want to go and lose 12 golf balls. You know, in the old days, like when they built Oak Hill in Oklahoma, whatever, Pete was always told, build the hardest golf course you can find. People yep. love to get beat up, I guess. Now they put the music on, which I'm not that crazy about, but they have music and they, you know, they smoke a cigar and they have a beer and, you know, they play and they, you know, we've cut a lot of the rough down so they can find their ball pretty much everywhere. On the Tee to the Dog, we've added 2 beautiful bars now that we have, and not necessarily to get people to talk about booze only, but, you know.
No, let's talk about booze. That's fine with me.
Well, that's all right. Well, you know, we have all the drinks you want there, and it's really done modernly. And we even have a little tradition. We're trying to get this going. You know, we always wondering what Pete liked. Well, Pete liked chocolate ice cream. I can tell you that. He really loved that. So, and he was allergic to chocolate, believe it or not.
What?
he was. And he would come to my house, would have some chocolate. The next thing you know, he'd come out, his eyes were all puffy, and his wife would get mad at him and say, you ate chocolate, didn't you? So we're trying to put, you know, when you play Kohler, they have bratwurst that they give, I think, at the turn, right?
Yep.
Okay, so we were thinking about doing, you know, so I said, well, you know, Pete loves the you know, little ice cream. So we're trying to put now a little soft ice cream machine, and we're going to give little cones, and we're going to call Pete's Treat. So when they get to, they play number the first 4 or 5 holes or some, there's a bar between 4 and 6. You can play 4, stop, you play 5, 6, and you come back at it. And we would offer a little Pete's Treat, which if you want, be a little cone, small cone with a little chocolate ice cream, you know, as a little refreshment or something between nice. Between your vodka and your Presidente beer or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we have night golf and, you know, the driving range now, we have all this, you know, the young people want to know what their ball speed is or what their, so, you know, we have TrackMan and, you know, we have all kinds of equipment, putting lab and, you know, these kids, they want to know what the shaft, if it's, you know, if it's the right shaft and the, yeah, I mean, you know, the equipment, how much, you know, everybody's trying the ball that can go further and everything else. So So we're doing it basically that even the kid, you know, these young kids drive it a mile. So they, I want them to drive it a mile, but I don't want it to hit it 300 yards and they're 100 yards in the weeds. They can't find the golf ball. So we, you know, you got places to hit it. And unless you're on the teeth, and if on the front nine, if you go left, you're in the ocean. And on the back, if you go right, you're in the ocean. But you still have space on the other side. So, you know, you can hit on six, for example. You can hit it two fairways across, and you can still find your golf ball. But I think that's what it is. You need to make it fun. They don't like as much serious as, you know, as we used to be. I mean, for me, it was like, okay, serious all the time. You play golf, and maybe you have a little bet with your buddies. But, you know, they... That's not something they totally, you know, they're into betting a little bit, but, you know, they'll sit on the 19th hole there on the tee to the dog, which is right over the nine green. And you got people, these guys are sitting there and they cheer on. And if somebody makes a putt and, you know, it's becoming just a game that, you know, it's a game. They're not so serious. You know, I did a little competition when we have a tie in some of the tournaments that we do that. We stand on the balcony there on number 19, on the 19th hole, and I get a bunch of golf balls there, and people will throw, and obviously after everybody's done out there, but they'll throw the golf ball towards the nine green and try to do it closest to the pin. Huh. And we did a little charity event there where people could buy a golf ball for, you know, a buck or something, and then, or, you know, three for five or whatever the heck we did. And people would throw towards the flag, right? It's right, whatever the flag is. And it's a little hill, you know, goes from back to front. So they're throwing the ball and it's rolling and everybody's cheering. And so that's how we used to do the playoff instead of having go out back on the golf course. And, you know, so we did because we gave the same prize to everybody at that if they tied in their division. But I want to tell you, that was the funniest thing. And people went crazy. And now there's people that say to me sometimes they see me there, Jill, when are we going to do that this competition, throw golf balls? I say, well, we got to wait till people finish. And the way we're busy right now, they don't quite finish until dark. You know, they finish about, you know, when, just before dark. So, but yeah, that's what we're doing for the young generation. You know, my grandkids love to play golf. Two of them love to play golf. One is really good and the other one is pretty good, but just lives in New York, so he doesn't have the same opportunity.
Yeah.
But they love to go out there. You know, they want closest to the pin, and they want, you know, he'll put a little music on the cart or something. I said, please turn that music down. It's driving me crazy. Oh, Papa, you're getting too old. And it's, you know, that's why we have so many. I mean, since pandemic, it's unbelievable the amount of golfers that have. I mean, every club around the area here in West Palm, all the private clubs are closed, and they're asking for, you know, like some of them $1 million, 500,000 initiation. You know, it's crazy, but hey, listen, I'm not complaining. It's a good thing. Like, you know, the guy that worked for Jason at Casa de Mar, the VP of sales and marketing, always said, you know, we're packed or we're oversold. He said, well, that's a good problem to have.
It sure is a good problem to have. And you're going to have more problems once people listen to this and get that taste that you give so well of Casa de Campo. For those who want to go to a website and fight their way onto the property, and believe me, there's a lot more to do than golf. There's fishing, there's shooting, there's so much to do there. And even just if you do nothing, you're going to have a great time at Casa de Campo. For people who want to get some more information about that, where do they go? What's a website for us?
Well, it's Casa de Campo, which is CASADECAMPO.com.DO, David Olive. So you need to put DO because that's the Dominican Republic, basically. And so that's, you'll get to it if you just put .com, but .DO will get you a little more. And on there, you got the housing that we have, you know, hotel, villas, premier suites. You know, you could book your golf rounds. You could put your dinners. We have 7 restaurants, you know, all over the place there that you could go at the marina. You could, like you mentioned, you know, we have tennis, we have pickleball, padel. You got a shooting, you know, one of the best shooting area in term of skeet shooting and trap and, you know, fishing. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I live there basically 10 months a year and there's never a boring day. I can assure you that. You know, there's even a movie theater there that we just went to see a movie the other day. You know, it's basically you live in a little village. You know, we have 2,500 homes, 7,000 acres. You get a golf cart to drive around. So It's a spectacular place. If there's people say retired, I say retired for what? You know, I still do a lot of bookings and stuff and tournaments that I organize. And I said, why am I going to retire? Where am I going to go? I mean, I live in heaven, man. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
Where are you going to go to retire, buddy? You already live in the best place you could possibly be. It's it really is a spectacular place there. It really is. And as much fun as it is being there, it's just as much fun having you here with me on this show, Jill. Thank you so much for coming on. And we expect to have you on again before too very long, because there's always something new at CDC, and you're the best person to talk to about it. So expect a call, okay?
It's an honor to be with you, and I look forward to the next time.
You got it, my friend. That is Gil Gagnon. He is the director of golf emeritus at Casa de Campo. Casa de Campo, I could have people from the show, from that property on and talk for an hour, and you still wouldn't get all that there is to do there. There's so much to do. It's such a golf destination, but it's a destination for so many sports, for fishing, for shooting, as we were saying, for paddleball and pickleball and everything. But the thing that really stuck out for me in that interview was talking about Alice Dye and the golf courses, because she's so underrated. Alice Dye made sure that there was a place for women in those golf courses, that women were considered in those golf courses. And you'll see from the tee boxes and the way things are laid out, you'll see her influence. Pete now is like, Pete Dye, I'm not crazy about all of his golf courses and all the things that he did. I'm not crazy about him. But what he did there at Casa de Campo, I'm crazy about all of it. It's so good. And see for yourself. You won't be sorry. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with more golf and more stuff. Michael Williams, 19. Welcome back to the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host and Sherpa, for yet another episode. We all love to play, and if there's anything that we enjoy more than playing, it's playing well. It's still a hard game. It's an easy game because it's a ball and a stick. Nobody's playing defense. How hard can it be? I always say. But to get to the point that we want to, where we're doing those things intentionally that we want to do, that's what separates the great players in the game from us, quite frankly. And joining me today is someone who has really made a career out of really taking like the average player, like you and me, and turning us into much better players. She does that at multiple locations. Please welcome the CEO of the Golf Performance Academy, Leanne Gilchrist. Leanne, welcome to the 19th Hole. How are you?
Thanks, Michael. Doing great, thanks. Great to be here with you and having an awesome day here in Connecticut.
Well, thank you so much for joining and taking the time during this roasting summer. I have to ask, because the weather has been absolutely abysmal here. We had something called a heat dome where you could bake bread outside. It was so hot. Yeah. And I wonder, has it been that hot where you are too?
It has. I spend time between Florida and Connecticut for the most part. I was actually at a tournament in Germany last week, and it's been topping the hundreds. So it's just been extremely hot, yes. Kind of unbearable for golf, but, you know, the diehards are out there competing. And so that's awesome.
Yeah, you have my sympathies, of course. And yeah, but as we say, it's the season, so we are playing golf, and we all want to play better. You are an expert at that. But before we go into how you make people better, I want to talk a little bit about you and how you came to the game. Well, where are you from and how did you come to the game of golf?
So kind of a non-traditional story for the most part. I'm from South Africa, Durban, South Africa. And actually my ex-husband was a golf professional. And so I, at a young age, as a teenager, was exposed to the game from that angle. There were times when I carried his bag and was there for all the ups and the downs. And we both moved to the States and then started moving into the golf academy business. So that was sort of my entree to the game of golf. I'm not a great golfer, but I could probably give a pretty compelling golf lesson. That's my joke.
That's really a fascinating thing. And I just sort of gleaned from your story that you're kind of a child bride and you started off in South Africa. When did you move to the States and when did you decide that teaching golf rather than just playing golf was what you really wanted to do?
Yeah, so actually it was the mid-90s, just at the start of the concept and the business model of sports academies. It was quite a new thing. I think Canada had started, and Australia, there were a couple of sports academies, and mainly for other sports. But in the 90s, golf started to take off, and we see the rise, you know, we saw the rise of some academies. And so we were involved right at that sort of ground level, taking the model from tennis and other sports. Like I said, ice hockey, the long-term athletic development model, and applying it to golf. So it was a very exciting time. Spent 10 years in Bradenton as IMG Academy grew. And then we, you know, went on in the early 2000s to start our own academies.
That's really fascinating.
But the whole point, the whole point was really to find the secrets to development, to help accelerate development, take athletes who have potential and be able to really nurture that potential to get them to do some great things in the game.
Well, you mentioned it, like Vic Braden Academy. I've been fascinated by that since its beginning, since Braden himself was doing that. And it was always just fascinating how he would take these young children and turn them into champions by the time they were into their teens or early teens, and they would be U.S. champions. Going back to, I'm telling my age now, but Tracy Austin and people like that those people.
Yeah.
But you've taken that model and applied it to golf. So does that mean that you're working exclusively with children, mostly with children, or do you have an age mix going in the academy?
No. We are a junior academy. We have a bricks and mortar partner, the Golf Performance Center up in Ridgefield, Connecticut, and that focuses on adults. Mm-hmm. But the full-time academy is essentially a golf boarding school.
Wow.
So we our target age, the profile age is 14, 15, where there's still, you know, a good window of growth and development of skills. And then also, you know, biologically, you want them to be in that sweet spot of acquiring skills at the right time to be able to, you know, develop on pace.
I have so many questions about this. So how do you,
fire away.
How many students are in the academy and what's the selection process? How do you choose or how are they chosen?
Yeah, so it's very interesting because really the biggest driver for success is motivation, is intrinsic motivation. Obviously, there needs to be a baseline of athleticism, you know, a baseline of physical skill, but really the biggest driver is motivation, drive, hunger. So what we try to do is match up those things. There's no point in bringing students into the academy who don't have the motivation because it's not sustainable, right, in the long term. But what we try to do is find those that have the goals of developing, playing college golf, maybe being a professional, and try to match them to the environment. We very much a boutique academy. We've never wanted to be the biggest. We don't aspire to be the biggest. And it takes just an inordinate amount of effort and resources to develop an athlete. So we keep the numbers small. In Connecticut, our maximum's 24. In Florida, the maximum's 40. So we really, you know, take what we do very seriously.
Interesting. And is it a full year academy or seasonal? How does the timing work?
Yeah, it's full year. So the athletes, you know, they'll be heading to the Florida Academy mid-August because school starts earlier in August in Florida. Mm-hmm. We start here in the beginning of September in Connecticut, and runs, you know, 9.5, 10 months. And then the summertime is a great opportunity for the athletes to go out to put everything they've done during the year to the test, go play all their summer tournaments. And we do offer a lot of support even through the summer. You know, the athletes can come back, get a tune up, come see the coaches. We'll go to some tournaments to support them. You know, it's really a ongoing support, training, assessing kind of system of development.
And it is a boarding facility, right? The students live, eat, sleep.
Yep.
There, yeah.
Yep, they sure do. Which can be difficult because, you know, it becomes a lot. Like I said, the hunger, the why has to be really compelling to sustain them through this because it's a lot of intensity. It's an intense program. And so you have to really want it to thrive here.
This is all just, it's super duper fascinating to me. We're of course talking to Leanne Gilchrist, the CEO of the Golf Performance Academy, Michael Williams, still your host. So Leanne, you have about, I guess, as you mentioned, about 60 or so students overall. Describe an average day for your students. What are they doing from the time they get up to the time they go to bed?
Okay, so we are heavily sort of steeped in data, not to be overly complicated or complex, but we have a philosophy that function dictates form. So the physiology of the athlete, the way they function, the way they function physically is really important to their golf game. So, you know, you asked me about tips and things. It all starts with the body and how the body works. Mm-hmm. So our athletes wake up really early and they all work out first thing in the morning. 5 days a week they spend in the gym. And the focus of that isn't just to get big and strong, but it's to be functional. So the athletes work a lot on their corrective exercises and the physical things that they can do to help their golf game, help give them more power, more efficiency, more flexibility, to make sure that they don't suffer any injuries and all that good stuff.
Hmm. Okay, so a lot of physical work that goes into it. On the golf instruction side, how do you portion that out between the different skills that are involved in the game, the different strategies that are involved in the game? How do you portion that out for students?
So sorry, I know I got down a little rabbit hole with the physical, but
no,
they would start their day. They would start their day in the gym, and then just the day in the life would be school in the morning, lunch, and then golf training. In the evening, there could be more schoolwork. They could have tutors, just make sure they get caught up, and then sort of early to bed for a whole nother day. At the start of a school year, we do heavy assessments. So we have a proprietary golf tool called the Player Development Index. And it's a fabulous tool for any golfer, recreational, competitive. And basically, it measures your raw skills. So that's your long game skills, your short game skills, putting skills, mental skills, physical skills. And then as you train, develop, improve, you get reassessed to see that those skills are developing on pace the way they should develop. So we have a development plan for each athlete. It's very individualized and bespoke. And then on a daily basis, they working on those things that fit their game, their needs, where they need to improve physically, where they need to strengthen. That's why the correctives in the gym are individualized. So basically, we do training in a group setting, yet it's an individual program within the group setting. And I don't know if that answers your question, Michael. There is a lot more to that, believe me.
No, I get that. And we're going to send people to the website for more details on this, because I know that there are some listeners who have very talented juniors who they would like to have taken to the next level, which leads me to my next question. Again, referring to the Vic Braden article from so long ago, but I remember it like reading, like I read it yesterday, that one of Vic Braden's things with his tennis academy was he was predicting that he could fill, if he had the right set of students, he could fill every place in the Wimbledon quarterfinals with his students. They would all be students from his academy. And I would just want to ask, for your students, is the goal of the student and of the academy to have people competing at a high level on professional tours? Do they want to turn out club professionals? What's the general goal for the students and for you at running the academy? What's your goal for those for those students?
So we are athletes, we competitors, we love trophies, we love wins. All of that is true because it's a sport, right? We've just come off from some of the majors. You know, we watch the US Open or the British Open and we're really inspired. However, with that said, I would say that our goal is really to help each individual achieve what they want to achieve. And so I would never be so presumptuous as to say I would want to fill, you know, the leaderboard of every great tournament, because that's not what we're here for, really. Our goal is development, and that's human development, athletic development, development as a student, and then just as a good citizen and as a good human being in the world we live in. So I think I would have a little different take. Again, we don't want to be the biggest, so it would be impossible for me to say, you know, I'm going to fill, you know, win every trophy that's out there. I think also when the focus is on sort of development itself, so the journey, right, the process, then the outcomes are going to differ with different people, and that's okay. You know, we have students that want to be a doctor or want to go on and do something really different, but they're using the vehicle of golf to get an education and to play college golf. And I think that's great. I think that's a very worthy endeavor. And that's sort of what drives us.
And the age of the students are 14 to 18, correct?
Correct. We do have some younger. So we, you know, we do start at 13, all the way through a postgraduate year. But the sweet spot is 14, 15, because that way they can still develop. You know, you can't rush development. Athletic development is going to happen at the pace that it needs to happen. And so coming to the academy early enough gives the athlete enough time to build the right skills and narrow that sort of performance gap, right? The reason there's a gap there is because some skills are just underdeveloped. And it's as simple as that. We want to give them the right mental skills, physical skills, golf skills, and life skills to just be, you know, be able to go out there and do their best and achieve their potential.
Well, I know that you all watched the major, and the major season just ended with the British Open. And again, with the Vic Braden Academy comparison, do many of your students have aspirations to be world champion competitive golfers? Is that their goal?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not everybody, But we definitely have student athletes that have big dreams and big goals. And like I said, what we come to work every day to do is to help give them the tools to make those dreams a reality. We do have some students that have come through the academy, and more specifically the Golf Performance Center, using the same system of training that we use at the academy, that are now on the PGA Tour. John Vanderlyn, he's a great example. He got his tour card last year and he came through our system. So we see it at work, and you know, very, very proud of that, very proud of them.
As well you should be. And let's see, you have campuses in Connecticut, in Florida. Do you have a campus in South Carolina as well, correct?
No.
You don't have it.
Okay. Nothing in South Carolina, just Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Okay.
We actually partner with RPS Academies at Port St. Lucie.
Yeah.
And then Ridgefield, Connecticut, where we partner with the Golf Performance Center. And the Ridgefield campus is absolutely, yeah, spectacular, second to none. So it's really the only academy of its type in the Northeast. And it's brilliant. It's a brilliant testing ground because of the conditions up here. They definitely challenge the athletes. A lot of college golf is played in cold conditions. And yeah, so it's great preparation.
So for those who would be interested, what's the process for students and parents of students who would like to be involved in the Golf Performance Academy? What's the process for admittance?
Sure. So, Michael, there are just many, you know, places on our website for more information, to speak with an advisor, to even, you know, start an application. So I would just encourage any listeners who feel that their children or somebody they know is a great candidate for a full-time boarding golf academy, just give us a ring. Come take a look. Come and learn about what we do and see if it's a good fit. One thing I would just emphasize is it's the Golf Performance Academy. There's a lot of similar names out there, so I just, you know, don't want there to be any confusion.
Roger that. The Golf Performance Academy. I'm just fascinated by what you do. And the opportunity to work with talented young people is a special thing. I know that. But the opportunity to take them to the next level and help them achieve their goals is really something special. And I really applaud you for doing that. Thank you so much for taking the time today. And if you would, please, we didn't say the website name. So if you would just give us the place where we can find out more information online, that would be great.
Absolutely. TheGolfPerformanceAcademy.com. And follow us, follow our social media once you get to the website. Also, if anybody's interested in PDI or the Player Development Index, they can also feel free to check out that website, and that's golfpdi.com.
Outstanding. Leanne, thank you so much again for joining us, and I hope to have you back
Michael.
Later on in the year so we can discuss so many things. Great restaurants to go to.
Absolutely.
Golf tips.
Absolutely.
We have so much to talk about, okay?
We do have a lot.
Lovely.
We do, absolutely.
Well, thank you again for coming, and good luck with everything, okay?
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Thank you. That was Leanne Gilchrist, the CEO of the Golf Performance Academy. I have a profound interest in anyone who is working with young people. As you all know, I did a lot of work with the First Tee, which has a different mission than the Golf Performance Academy, a different mission and vision, but to work with young people is so rewarding, and to be a part of anything that helps them to achieve their goals, to achieve their dreams, is so satisfying. I can't even tell you. So the fact that this organization exists to make the dreams of young people come true is amazing, to give them the tools and the techniques and the lifestyle that they need to be able to achieve their goals. To watch that happen is just amazing, and I can't wait to have Leanne back on the show, but to hear some major champion as they hold up a trophy talk about that experience. I'm waiting for that to happen. It's going to happen soon, I assure you. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more golf and more other stuff. Stay with us. Michael Williams, 19th hole. That's it, and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I would like to thank my very special guest, Gilles Gagnon, from the esteemed and highly awarded destination Casa de Campo. It's just amazing down there. He's describing some of it. He gives you some of the feeling of it. He's got a deep love for it. I have a deep passion and love for that place as well. I've been there several times. It was one of the first places I went to as a golf reporter, and it remains to this day one of the most amazing locations, and it's got improvements all the time. The management is so lucid and has a vision for what should be, and they're not looking to the past, they're looking to the future, and I'm just so, so happy about what they're doing. I love it, every bit of it, and I thank you, Jill, for coming on and sharing some of that with us, and thank you also to Leanne Gilchrist of the Golf Performance Academy. And I couldn't be more excited to see what she has and what she will do, quite frankly, what she will do with these tremendous young talents that come to her looking for the path to success. It's going to be a fascinating story, and I'm glad that we caught that beginning of that story, and I can't wait to follow that story through to the end, which I'm sure will be part of that will be some of her players lifting championship trophies. I have no doubt about that. You can listen to this show and all of the great episodes of the 19th Hole on spectacular websites like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you can find exceptional podcasts. Thank you, of course, for listening. We do it all for you. Please join us again next week for another episode of Wonderful Golf and Golf Lifestyle. In the meantime, even if it's hot, because it is hot in a lot of places in the U.S., but even if it's hot, go out, definitely hit some balls, and when you do, try your level best to hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th hole.